and songs with free hot dogs served by Nisswa and Brainerd Lakes Area Lions. It's the 77th annual Paul Bunyan Days in Akeley, June 26th through the 28th. Enjoy live music and activities all weekend with a classic car show Saturday from 10 to 2 and the Grand Parade at 1 p.m. on Sunday. Walker Bay Theater presents the comedy Four Old Broads. Shows are at 7 p.m. every Friday and Saturday in June, plus Sunday matinees at 3. Tickets available at the door or by calling Walker Bay Theater. The Minnesota Board on Aging invites residents ages 60 and older to take a survey to help improve statewide aging services. The survey is open through July 15th. Search for Minnesota Board of Aging online to find a link. National Bank of Commerce hosts their annual summer fundraiser to benefit United Way of Bemidji on Thursday, June 25th from 11 to 2. A bratwurst lunch will be served at both locations in Bemidji with sit-down, takeout, and drive-through options available. And now we're going to take you back to Morning Edition here on KAXE KBXE.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is meeting with Arab leaders whose countries were hit by Iran during the war. NPR's Aya Betraoui reports Rubio is presenting an interim agreement to end the conflict negotiated by the U.S. and Iran.
Rubio's in Abu Dhabi meeting with the ruler of the United Arab Emirates before stops in Kuwait and Bahrain. All three countries host U.S. troops and have been targeted by Iranian missiles and drones, including during the past months of ceasefire. But they weren't consulted on the U.S.-Israeli decision to launch the war. Now Rubio tells reporters in the UAE that he's in the Gulf to listen, quote, more than we are to talk.
We want to hear their thoughts, especially in the aftermath of this weekend in Switzerland, and make sure that their views are taken into account in every decision that we make, because they're our partners.
That meeting in Switzerland between the U.S. and Iran concluded with the U.S. temporarily lifting oil sanctions as Iran reopens the Strait of Hormuz. Rubio's regional tour does not include a stop in Israel, which is opposed to ceasefires with Iran and in Lebanon. Aya Betraoui, NPR News, Dubai.
President Trump is heading to Capitol Hill today to meet with Senate Republicans a day after lawmakers voted to limit his war powers in Iran. The Senate joined the House yesterday in approving a resolution aimed at restricting the president's ability to pursue further military action against Iran without congressional approval. NPR's Eric McDaniel reports the measure reflects growing concerns among lawmakers about the conflict and Trump's interim deal to end it.
Congress has the power to declare war and regulate military conflict. It hasn't been able to do that, though, for the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran. The Trump administration hasn't asked for approval or a declaration of war in contravention of the law. This resolution is not legally binding and not likely to change President Trump's behavior, but the message is clear. A majority of lawmakers, including a handful of Republicans, disapprove of the Iran war, as does a large majority of the American public. This vote comes as Vice President Vance is hashing out the details of an agreement to end the war, the initial terms of which have been roundly rebuked by members of both parties. Eric McDaniel, NPR News, Washington.
The results of New York's primary elections are raising fresh questions about the future of the Democratic Party after progressive candidates scored a number of victories yesterday. Steve Kestenbaum reports the outcome is being viewed as an early test of New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani's political influence.
Mamdani is stumped heavily for Claire Valdez. She's a state assembly member. She was declared the winner in Brooklyn's 7th congressional district. That seat is being vacated by retiring Representative Nidia Velazquez. The candidates backed by Mamdani were highly critical of Israel's actions in Gaza. That includes former New York City Comptroller Brad Lander. He's a close friend of the mayor, and he had a big win over incumbent Congressman Dan Goldman.
At Steve Kestenbaum reporting. This is NPR News in Washington. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Ukrainian drone strikes are aimed at undermining the country's solidarity for the war in Ukraine. NPR's Charles Maines reports Putin's comments come nearly a week after Ukraine struck Moscow.
It was the largest and most destructive hit on the capital since Russia launched its mass invasion of Ukraine more than 4 years ago. Yet Putin didn't address the issue directly. Instead, in remarks to military graduates, Putin called on the defense ministry to minimize Ukrainian drone strikes on civilian infrastructure. Putin said the goal of the Ukrainian attacks was to divide a Russian society that the Kremlin leader maintains is still united behind the war effort. Putin also insisted Russian forces were continuing to make steady advances on all fronts in Ukraine, a claim at odds with Western intelligence assessments showing heavy Russian losses and incremental battlefield gains at best. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
A federal judge in San Francisco has barred the government from making arrests at immigration courts, a practice that expanded shortly after President Trump returned to office. The court decision says the government failed to justify the policy as required by law. The ruling marks the second setback for courthouse arrests since May, when a judge in New York issued a similar order. A Homeland Security official called the decision an example of judicial overreach. Stocks across Asia closed mixed today. Japan's Nikkei average lost more than 600 points, while shares were higher in China and Hong Kong. On Wall Street, Dow futures are trading lower at this hour. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds working to maximize the impact of charitable giving and to create customized philanthropic solutions. Learn more at fjc.org.
Our next pick of 76 is Ry Cooder's fifth solo album, Chicken Skin Music. Sandwiched between a pair of Lead Belly covers are minstrel tunes done funky, an Appalachian traditional and Hawaiian slack guitar medley, and norteño and bolero versions of pop country songs. In particular, the Hawaiian and Tex-Mex influence is strong, with authentic Hawaiian guitar players Gabby Pahanui and Ada Isaacs, plus accordion legend Flaco Jimenez. Cooter's standing as one of the era's most sought-after session players gave him the freedom to pursue his eclectic and uncommon-for-the-time music tastes in his own albums. Chicken Skin Music paved the way for the more eclectic side of roots and Americana, and showed that seemingly far apart genres are always more connected than you think.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. President Trump is set to have lunch on Capitol Hill today with Senate Republicans. The get-together comes amid rising tensions between Trump and his congressional colleagues.
Yeah, last night, four Senate Republicans voted with Democrats to advance a resolution directing Trump to pull troops out of the conflict with Iran. On the other hand, Trump has also repeatedly blown up their strategy for getting legislation passed, even while venting his frustration online with Majority Leader John Thune about not getting what he wants done.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from a Republican strategist on how tense things really are between congressional Republicans and Trump. But first, we go to NPR congressional reporter Sam Greenglass. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Michelle.
So how is this disconnect playing out on the Hill?
So just to give you one example of this, Majority Leader Thune thought he had a plan last week to get this key spy tool reauthorized. Democrats were threatening to block it over Trump's pick for acting director of national intelligence. And if Thune could quickly confirm a more acceptable permanent pick, the crisis could be averted. Then, just before that confirmation hearing, Trump blew up the plan in a 4 a.m. social media post. Senate Republicans were stunned. The blowback was swift. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski described it to me like sled dogs startled by a moose.
You got half the team going over here and half the team going over here. It is chaos. And then what that musher has to do is he's got to stop and spend all of his time untangling this mess.
And as the musher of the Senate, Thune has had to untangle lots of these messes lately.
So why can't they get on the same page when it comes to strategy?
So this conflict stems in large part from Trump's push for a strict voter ID law, the Save America Act. He says Republicans will never win another election without it. The reality is that there are just not the votes to pass it in the Senate. Trump has called on Thune to skirt the 60-vote threshold there by eliminating the filibuster. Last week in a post that actually mentioned Thune, he called anyone against that idea a fool. The White House said in a statement that Trump enjoys working with Thune, but Michelle, it's Thune that often has to give Trump a reality check.
So what does all this say? What do these episodes say about Thune and his relationship with Trump?
Republican Senator John Kennedy told me Thune is like a golden retriever. No one dislikes him. Translation there, Trump's conflict with Thune is really just not personal. And most of the Republican caucus is still behind their leader. And for Thune, the filibuster is about preserving the consensus-driven nature of the Senate. That's what former Republican Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia told me. He's a friend of Thune's.
He feels very strongly that the institution matters. And we get the best legislation when you have input by Republican and Democrat.
So, Sam, are there tangible implications as a result of this friction between the two men?
Some Republicans worry Trump is undercutting their shared agenda and focusing more on 2020 than 2026, pushing old claims about stolen elections and targeting incumbents he sees as disloyal. Some of those departing members now feel more uninhibited, like Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, who provided a crucial vote to advance that War Powers Act. I did ask Thune whether he worries Trump's actions will hurt Republicans this fall, and he said focusing on pocketbook issues will be the path to keeping the majority. I pressed him, though, if it is hard to stay focused on those things right now. And Thune told me he is trying his best.
That is NPR's Sam Greenglass. Sam, thank you.
You're welcome.
We've called up someone this morning who can speak more to tensions between Senate Republicans and President Trump. Political strategist Doug High served as communications director for the Republican National Committee. He also spent time as an aide and staffer in the Senate and the House. So, Doug, let's start with what Virginia Senator Tim Kaine on All Things Considered said yesterday.
For now, I want to just make sure everybody understands what a big deal it is when in the middle of this conflict, Congress of two Republican houses have looked the president in the face and said, this war is illegal. It's time to stop it.
So, Kaine, they're talking about limiting President Trump's war powers in Iran. And the president called the resolution poorly timed and meaningless. And he's right. You know, the second part, meaningless. It doesn't carry the force of the law behind it. So what do you think, Doug? Is this a big deal?
It is and it isn't for the reasons that you just stated.
Okay.
And look, Republicans have been clear, usually more in private, what we've read about in meetings than in public, that they want to be involved in this process. And one of the things that this administration, that this president has never done, going back to the State of the Union address, is give a simple roadmap of here's what we want to do, here's what our objectives are, here's how we define victory. That still exists today, and that's a big part of the Republican frustration that we're hearing about.
Is there anything to the fact that Senator Dave McCormick and Mitch McConnell missed the vote, and the Senate voted 50-48. So if they would have been there, maybe it gets defeated by J.D. Vance.
Sure. Look, math is hard. Math is hard in the United States Senate. It's hard in the House of Representatives as well. When you have slim margins like this, any absence can cause a real problem legislatively or even on something in a resolution for the administration. How many times have we looked at House votes to see who's absent and who isn't? With Tom Keene, the Republican member of Congress from New Jersey who's been out for 3 months, that makes Mike Johnson's job just a little bit tougher. Obviously, John Thune has some of those problems as well. McCormick was with Trump. So he certainly had a valid excuse with the administration for why he wasn't there.
Nevertheless, though, are you sensing any shift, significant or otherwise, in the party away from Donald Trump?
Not anything significant and not anything that we'd know yet. Look, we've heard a lot of stories of tense meetings with senators at the Wednesday lunches yelling at White House staff, secretaries, appointees, and so forth. Donald Trump's going to be at that lunch today. There's a big difference between yelling at staff members and yelling at the president to his face. We'll see how much we hear of that today.
What do you consider the biggest rifts between the president and Republicans on Capitol Hill?
The biggest risk is what we've seen so far this year, that we're not focused on the issues that voters are very clearly saying that they're focused on. And that starts with affordability. Obviously, the war in Iran is a separate problem, but certainly impacts that as well. And Republicans, and frankly, Democrats as well, want to be talking about here's what we're trying to do to reduce costs. And it's why I think the legislation, the 21st Century Road to Housing Act, that passed with huge bipartisan numbers in both the House and the Senate, deserve a lot more attention than they've gotten. We've spent a lot more time in Washington, D.C. on reflecting pools than smart legislation that Republicans and Democrats can talk about in their districts.
You know, Doug, I just earlier in the show, I spoke to Mike Lawler, a Republican congressman from New York, about whether for him, if it was a dance, you know, on the line between, you know, not alienating the president, but also, you know, maybe trying to not alienate the voters who might, you know, penalize him for his association with Trump. And for him, he said it wasn't a dance at all. But how risky is it at this point for any Republican to go against President Trump with the midterm elections coming up?
Well, it depends on what it is. We've seen Republicans have been able to be critical of the president anytime they want to, depending on what the issue is. And so Lindsey Graham can be very tough on Donald Trump on Tuesday and somehow manages to be on the golf course with him on Saturday. What it means is that they can't be critical of Trump on those things that are capital T Trumpy. And this is where the War Powers Resolution really comes into play. That he lost that vote is something that he's going to bring up in that lunch today. There's no doubt about it.
So that you think that's going to be number one on his agenda for that lunch?
Well, you never know what's number one on Donald Trump's agenda, because there's the obvious of what we would think it is. And Trump is well known to go in any direction he certainly feels is in his interest at that very moment.
All right. That's former Republican National Committee Communications Director Doug High. Doug, as always, thanks.
Thank you.
Most voters disapprove of the war with Iran that President Trump started. So Tuesday, when the president spoke at a Mack truck plant in Macungie, Pennsylvania, he seemed ready to change the subject. NPR's Daniel Kurtzleben reports.
Just ahead of Trump's speech, a reporter asked the president, will Americans support an increase in defense spending for the Iran war when they are struggling financially? In his answer, Trump was insistent.
Not only do they support it, they demand it because they won't allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon.
And in his speech, there was little sign that Americans might have struggled when the president's attacks on Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz, pushing inflation upward. Trump mainly talked about the conflict as being over.
But as you know, we just achieved a historic peace agreement with Iran to end the conflict in the Strait of Hormuz.
And to be clear, the U.S. and Iran are still negotiating an end to the war. But the rally was more an opportunity to talk about other topics, in particular the economy, albeit disconnected from how the war affected it. Trump focused largely on past economic accomplishments as opposed to future plans. He touted tax cuts Republicans passed last year, as well as tariffs making foreign cars more expensive.
Very importantly, I opposed a 25% tariff on medium and heavy-duty trucks, so that Mack Truck could do very well with its factory in Pennsylvania.
Trump's approval on the economy is at its lowest point ever, 33%, according to the latest NPR PBS News Marist poll. That's down 6 points from a year ago. And it matters ahead of November's midterms. Trump promoted Republican Representative Ryan McKenzie, who he has endorsed in a tough race in Pennsylvania's 7th District. Besides that, though, Trump ran through his well-known standards. He acknowledged his loyal fans.
Oh, look at my guys, front row Joes. I got these front row Joes.
He joked about his nicknames for Joe Biden and also joked about transgender people in sports, at one point impersonating a female weightlifter.
She's like this, you seen, drops them, and she's like devastated for the rest of her life.
When he comes back to Washington, though, political reality will still be there. Trump is set to meet with Senate Republicans today, four of whom yesterday voted in favor of a resolution to pull troops from Iran. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
You You are listening to Morning Edition here on the Wednesday Morning Show on People Power Radio, KAXE, KBXE. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'll be joined in just a bit by DJ Dang, and we'll be your hosts until 9 o'clock before we hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters. Watermark Arts Center in Bemidji hosts an outdoor artisan market on their south lawn this Saturday from 9 to 1. Shop art, flowers, locally made foods, and more with live indigenous flute music by Frankie Graves. Brainerd Animal Hospital presents Pups in the Park this Saturday from 10 to 2 at Loom Park in Brainerd. See dog demos throughout the event, plus there's a pie eating contest for kids and dogs, a silent auction, crafts, food, and much more to raise funds for the Babinski Foundation Animal Shelter. Santa Gita and Aitken hosts Better Together Wednesdays, a weekly community social event, Wednesdays from 2 to 7 p.m. Includes games, art, music, and dance party. Find Santa Gita on Facebook for more information. The University of Minnesota's North Central Research and Outreach Center in Grand Rapids invites you to its annual Visitors Day, Saturday, June 27th from 10 to 4. Explore 130 years of agricultural research and education through exhibits, demonstrations, and hands-on activities. Free and open to all. The Coleraine City Band concerts are Thursday evenings during June and July at 7 p.m. at the Longyear Park Log Gazebo. Free hot dogs at 6.
Support for NPR comes from the station. And from Progressive Insurance with its Name Your Price tool, a way to see coverage options based on a driver's budget. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Price and coverage match limited by state law. From the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, investing in creative thinkers and problem solvers who help people, communities, and the planet flourish. More information is available at hewlett.org. From Clarivate, celebrating the 150th anniversary of the American Library Association and its support for libraries, library workers, and everyone they serve. Learn more at ALA.org. And from the Wallace Foundation.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And Amy Martinez. The music of Motown Records was formative to a generation of Detroiters. NPR's Don Gagne would know because he's one of them. He's reported on that for our series America in Pursuit, where stories from around the country illustrate life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But Don found himself wondering about the next generation of Detroiters. Do they get a sense of pride and shared identity from Motown music, or do they groan and roll their eyes when their parents play it in the car? Well, Don visited a storied city high school to find out.
This is a Madrigal choir class at Cass Technical High School in Detroit, a place where the legacy of Motown looms large. Diana Ross of the Supremes went here, as did several members of the label's legendary studio band. That history is all around this place. But how much of it do today's students really know?
So I get you guys calling out names, so let's put some groups down. Who do we have?
Zachary Five.
Yeah, of course.
Temptations.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
Teacher William Harrison kicked off the discussion with a question.
If there were all of these other record companies and people could have records, right, anywhere, why was there a need for a place like Motown?
And student Jordan Reed had an answer.
Well, segregation was going on at the time, and the white labels, they didn't really want to give black people an opportunity to showcase themselves, showcase their talents, because they didn't see us as people. So Motown really showed that black people, we can be elegant, we can have talent, we can be whatever we want to be, because Motown gave us the opportunity to be what we know that we are.
For Deja Barnes and Brian Howard, Motown holds a deep connection to family memories.
Like, black people, everybody playing Motown music at the cookouts. It's something that, like, now we still play it just because, like, it brings everybody together still. And it's like a real sentimental feeling.
Growing up, I used to live with my grandmother, and she had this little record player that she used to play Marvin Gaye songs a lot. And we used to just dance to it. I mean, I had no idea what was happening in the songs, but I was just a kid moving around. I was just happy that my nana was up and moving with me.
For Soraya Carr, Motown became a source of pride and inspiration.
when I was little, I didn't know much about Detroit at all, and I wasn't really proud of it because I didn't know about it. But when I grew up to learn about all the different people who came out of Motown or whoever got big from where I was from, it was very, it was eye-opening to me.
For Jordan Reed, Motown also provides a counter-narrative to so much of what the world often thinks about his hometown.
I think a lot of times Detroit has so many negative and untrue things just put onto our reputation. And Motown, it just kind of gives us something to brag about to go against that.
Now, we should point out it wasn't all praise in this classroom. Just ask Peyton Butler and Anaya Nesbitt.
I personally don't really listen to Motown music. I do find it enjoyable. It's just not exactly my cup of tea.
Honestly, I used to hate when my mom played all her music. Like, I hated it so bad. But,
and this, you know, is Motown.
Yes, it would be Motown. Like, heavy on the Marvin Gaye, though. I just be like, girl, turn this off. It's too much.
But even these critiques still came alongside appreciation. Again, Anaya Nesbitt.
When I started to listen to my music, especially like Beyonce or different artists, and when they talked about who was their inspirations or the skills that they learned and who they learned them from, I appreciate who they were inspired by more. Like, I appreciate, you know, Diana Ross. I appreciate Michael Jackson for giving my new artists who I listen to those skills.
And there's another way Motown has stayed current, through sampling and covers by newer artists.
Men spending most of their lives living in
However these students first encountered Motown, there was broad agreement on one thing. The music is a part of the city. And more than 50 years after these songs were released, they still resonate with young listeners here. Again, Deja Barnes.
When I was younger, I ain't going through nothing for real. I just want to hear about regular music. But as I get older and I can really relate to some of the stuff that they talking about, the music hit different, literally. Like, it actually means something to me now.
Our visit ended with a performance as the male students in the class sang an a cappella version of What's Going On, Marvin Gaye's 1971 soul masterpiece about searching for meaning in troubled times. Don Gagne, NPR News, Detroit.
Brother, brother, brother.
Okay, so we've been talking about musical legends. Now let's talk about some future icons in sport. We're talking about soccer superstars Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, who've been playing at the highest level for the better part of two decades.
And as this year's FIFA World Cup performances prove, they can still compete with players half their age and add to their legendary status with new individual records.
Cristiano Ronaldo, known as CR7, is competing for Portugal. And in Tuesday's group stage game against Uzbekistan, Ronaldo did something no man or woman has done before.
He scored goals in six different World Cups for a total of 10 World Cup goals to his name.
And he did it all at the age of 41. You know, I'm going to ask... Did you break any records at that age?
No records, just bones, trying to be Mr. Young Guy at 41, but I shouldn't have. No, I didn't have a Lionel Messi in my life who pushed me to those new heights like Ronaldo does. Now, just a day before Ronaldo set records, it was Messi who added to his long list of accolades.
Say more.
With two goals in Argentina's win against Austria on Monday, Messi became the leading goal scorer in World Cup history. He now has 18 goals, two more than former German striker Miroslav Klose, and one more than the Brazilian female player Marta.
And he's only 39. Yeah. Actually, it's his birthday today, so happy birthday
Feliz
to you.
Feliz cumpleaños.
Is he the GOAT, a future GOAT?
Oh.
GOAT-to-be?
Yeah, I think he has to be, right?
We'll see. But Messi and Ronaldo are, I guess we would say, at the tail end of their careers.
Yeah, Argentina already secured its ticket to the knockout stage. Portugal looking to follow suit, which means that fans get to see Messi and Ronaldo maybe play at least two more times. This is NPR News.
Toy Story 5 is on the big screen, and one of the movie's plot points is all about little screens. Screen time for kids, that is.
When my kids were spending too much time on screens, it made them really grumpy and unpleasant to be around.
I'm Scott Detrow. Research shows that screen time gets higher during the summer. A look at the battle between toys and technology on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And you can hear All Things Considered later today at 4 o'clock with your local host, Jennifer Barr. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I will be your host this morning along with DJ Deng in just a bit until 9 o'clock before we hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters, which will have a conversation with upcoming Beltrami County Block Party performer Lucy Michelle of the indie rock band Little Fevers, who'll be performing this Saturday along with Eric Koskinen and David Huckfeldt. So you'll want to tune in for that during Headwaters this morning. We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com. And we receive support from Sanford Bemidji Heart and Vascular Center, expanding cardiology services to our region. More at sanfordhealth.org. And we sent DJ Deng on location for an outdoor report, and it looks like he's made it back just in time. What can you say is going on outside, DJ Deng?
Good morning. It's beautiful out. It's really nice out. Yeah. The streets are still damp from the rain we got last night. And
yeah, were you woken up by the thunderstorms last night?
I was not.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think around the 2 a.m. thunderstorm woke me up.
Wow. Pretty heavy?
Kind of. Like, it was continuous thunder, but now I just get, like, anxious when I hear the thunder.
Oh, really? From last summer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kept me awake for a bit.
Yeah.
But then...
That stinks.
Because it was, like, windy, too, it sounded like.
Yeah. But I would say the wind makes me more nervous about possible bad things happening now.
But last night was sitting in my media room with the lights off, listening to Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde with the little lightning strikes going on in the background. It was a wonderful time.
It's a good album for storms.
I think so.
Yeah.
Visions of Johanna.
That should be we should add that to reviews. Like, good for a sunny day. Good for a nasty storm.
Yeah. Well, there's probably quite a few nasty storm Bob Dylan records out there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, any Nick Cave record mm-hmm. would go with a nasty storm.
How about, like, an Iron Maiden record? Would you go into the, like, the metal side of things?
Well, you're really stretching my knowledge of... But, yeah, Iron Maiden would probably be storms, too.
Yeah. How about REO Speedwagon, early stuff? Ride in the storm.
Yeah, I mean, they have a famous song about storms, but also, I would say, more sunny day music.
See, I think they're a nighttime music.
Rock and roll, pop.
Like, I feel like a song like Keep On Loving You, that hits harder at, like, nighttime.
Okay.
When you're driving in the car, you know?
Okay. Why are you asking me then?
I don't know. I'm just throwing out. We're talking about different reviews for albums of when you should listen to them.
Okay. Before you stop, then, you have to name a sunny daytime one.
Vampire Weekend's Contra.
Sure.
Well, you name one then.
Oh, gosh.
Modern Lovers, that's a good one.
Yeah, I would say Modern Lovers is a good driving around with your windows rolled down.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take that.
Excellent. Well, we are your hosts this morning. We got quite the morning show packed for you this morning. We are going to be talking with some people from the Beltrami County Farmers Bureau. They have a breakfast going on this Sunday, and we are also going to be talking with some people from the Bemidji Community Food Shelf, talking about their farm program, and then we're going to be joined by Jake Robinson, the owner of Bridget's Pub, to talk about the Beltrami Block Party that will be going on this Saturday.
Woo, 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 woo.
And now we're going to hear National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. The nation's 575 federally recognized tribes are now eligible for conservation grants from the National Park Service. And as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio reports, a new digital tool is designed to help them navigate the bureaucracy.
The Land and Water Conservation Fund has been around since 1964.
It receives about $900 million each year from offshore oil and gas royalties, not taxpayer dollars, to support conservation and outdoor recreation nationwide. And yet I had never heard of the program.
Starlin Rose Miller is from the Little Shell Chippewa Tribe of Montana. She's with the nonprofit Wilderness Society, which launched the new online hub.
Tribal governments are so busy. We thought if we could put a hub up, designed in partnership with indigenous-led orgs, agencies, nonprofits, that it could be helpful.
The fund has aided more than 47,000 projects in nearly every county nationwide. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
High energy costs are a fact of life in remote, rural Alaska with few easy answers. A brother and sister team from Bethel recently won top honors at an innovation competition hosted from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, they are committed to being part of the solution.
Fraternal twins Drini and Viosa Palumbi have more in common than the same birthday. So far, their education and career paths have followed side by side. The brother and sister graduated from high school with college credit gained through the ANSEP program and are currently studying mechanical engineering at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The Palumbi twins are busy advancing a prototype of a device that attaches to home boilers and aims to reduce heating costs in cold weather climates.
Essentially, it takes heat that would have been wasted by the boiler and just repurposes it to heat incoming water.
Their Arctic Heat Recovery System design earned the top prize and $21,000 at the Alaska Innovation Competition hosted by the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The same day, the pair celebrated their 20th birthday.
During the finals of that competition, we still had finals for our semester course, and stresses were high. It was a lot of good news that day.
This summer, the Palumbis are both in Washington, D.C., interning with a wildlife conservation nonprofit. In their off hours, they're plugging away at their prototype.
On my table right in front of me, we have a couple thermocouples and sensors. We're in two separate apartments, but we take turns whose room carries all the junk.
Drini says the heat recovery concept is nothing new, but that it's so far been focused on large-scale commercial applications.
I guess a lot of people just don't see a profit margin in developing it for Alaskan citizens, like residents, to use, but we're not really in it for the profit. We're in it because it's clean, it saves oil, it saves money, it saves pollutants from entering the atmosphere. It's just good all around.
Friends and family in Bethel, where fuel prices have recently spiked due to the war in Iran, are eager to be the first to test the device. The Palumbis say it has the potential to save homeowners thousands of dollars per year. They say the money they earned at this year's Arctic Innovation Competition is going directly into making the heat recovery system a reality. The second-generation Albanian Americans credit their mother for pushing them to apply together for the competition.
One of the core values is being like very family oriented. So I guess that's always been why we've been like gravitated towards doing the same things, because we've always been close.
Both say they could end up specializing in different engineering fields down the road. But for now, they say they're enjoying being a team as long as they can. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
National Native News is produced by Kohonic Broadcast Corporation, funded by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. My name is Andrew DeZingle. I'm here with DJ Deng. And in just a bit, we are going to hear more from More Edition, talking about the crisis pregnancy centers and tick bite prevention. That'll be coming up in just a moment. We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Or online at hottubsmn.com.
Donating stocks and mutual funds is a quick, easy way to support KAXE's future. You may receive tax benefits as well. Call Sarah for details at 218-326-1234.
And support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation, building a stronger community by mobilizing generosity around the needs of people in the greater Itasca area. For more than 30 years, the foundation has awarded over $30 million in grants and scholarships, creating lasting local impact. Learn more at gracf.org. Now, I know it's not Friday, DJ Deng, but do you have a football update for us with the World Cup going on? I know you're watching.
Well, all the stars are scoring. So Erling Haaland scoring, Kylian Mbappe scoring, and obviously Lionel Messi is now the all-time leading goal scorer in the men's World Cup history. But Cristiano Ronaldo finally jumped on that star goal scoring train last night and got two goals yesterday. So no big upsets, really. I'm still waiting for like a really big upset that's not a tie. All of the upsets so far have been ties, which are pretty monumental when you're a little country like Curacao or Cape Verde and you're playing Spain or you're playing like these huge soccer countries. So ties are cool in soccer. They work for part of the tournament. And I think starting in about a week and a half, there'll be no more ties. Everything is going to have to be decided.
So a thing about breaking the record for most goals in World Cup, aren't we early enough where could really run away with this record?
Yeah. I mean, he broke it and then he added to it. So yeah. I think he got 16, was breaking it, and now he's got 17, or I might be off by one.
I think it's 18 now.
Yeah, so he's at 18. But then also another player in the tournament, France's striker Kylian Mbappe, has like 15.
Oh.
And he also could, you know, score a hat trick in a game and boom, he's tied with Messi for the all-time, you know, like, so it's possible that we could have two from this tournament alone, which is pretty remarkable. But lots of fun. Scotland plays Brazil today in Miami, and the Tartan Army, Scotland's fans, have descended upon Miami, and there's a lot of men, shirtless men in kilts in Miami right now, and bagpipes.
Oh, excellent.
Drinking the city dry.
That's EJ Dang. You can always check out Football is Life this Friday around 8:40 time. Yep. This Friday. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Under the Trump administration, there's new support and federal investment for what are known as crisis pregnancy centers, organizations that try to persuade people not to have abortions. A nonprofit watchdog group says some of those centers are misleading pregnant patients by claiming they can rule out pregnancy complications when they can't. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin has this exclusive report.
There are thousands of crisis pregnancy centers across the country. They're often Christian organizations whose purpose is to try to keep people from having abortions. Many of the staff are volunteers who may or may not have medical training. Some wear scrubs or white coats and have clients fill out medical questionnaires. The centers usually promote abstinence, provide adoption and parenting resources, and pregnancy tests, all for free.
A storefront with an ultrasound machine might describe some crisis pregnancy centers around the country, including in New York.
That's Michelle Cooper-Smith, executive director of Campaign for Accountability, a nonprofit watchdog group. Her organization sent a letter this week to New York Attorney General Letitia James, shared exclusively with NPR. It requests that the AG's office investigate whether crisis pregnancy centers in New York are fraudulently advertising to women that they can diagnose ectopic pregnancies. That's a rare complication that happens when an embryo implants outside of the uterus. If it implants in a fallopian tube, the tube can rupture, which can be life-threatening. Cooper Smith's letter cites cases in Texas and Massachusetts where women in those states went to pregnancy centers that missed serious conditions.
They were told that their pregnancies were viable or told that, you know, everything was fine. And then later they found themselves in the hospital with an ectopic pregnancy or some other sort of pregnancy complication that was not diagnosed by the crisis pregnancy center.
Surprisingly, a major group that represents crisis pregnancy centers agrees that they are not set up to diagnose ectopic pregnancies and should not be making that promise on their websites. The National Institute of Family and Life Advocates supports a network of 1,800 crisis pregnancy centers. Here's the group's Vice President of Legal Affairs, Anne O'Connor, giving a webinar for the Pro-Life Team podcast last year.
Do not advertise we can rule out an ectopic. We really don't like to see that language because it is near impossible to rule out an ectopic.
She went on to explain that a single ultrasound can't establish whether someone has an ectopic pregnancy. That diagnosis requires multiple blood tests and multiple ultrasounds, and crisis pregnancy centers aren't staffed or set up to provide ongoing medical care for patients. She adds that centers can still talk about ultrasounds.
We're doing the ultrasound to see if the fetus is in the womb where it's supposed to be. So language like that.
Despite this guidance, Cooper Smith's organization found 100 examples of centers using language about ruling out ectopic pregnancies on their websites across 49 states. The National Institute of Family and Life Advocates did not respond to NPR's multiple requests for comment. Crisis pregnancy center marketing about ectopic pregnancies often references abortion medication, which has grown dramatically in popularity since Roe v. Wade was overturned. For instance, My Choice Pregnancy Care Center in New York's Hudson Valley says on its website, quote, if you plan on taking abortion pills, book an ultrasound to rule out an ectopic pregnancy, unquote. Dr. Jonas Swartz is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Duke Health, who's done research on crisis pregnancy centers. He says an ultrasound is not necessary before taking abortion medication.
Telemedicine abortion with medication abortion pills has been shown to be safe even without ultrasound.
An ectopic pregnancy diagnosis is a process that requires follow-up care and medical or surgical treatment, he says. Abortion medication won't resolve an ectopic pregnancy if there is one, but it won't make it worse either. In other words, these centers are marketing a service that they can't provide and is not medically necessary. Swartz says he's sympathetic to patients navigating the confusing early weeks of pregnancy, who might be worried and who might not be able to get in to see an OBGYN quickly.
Theoretically, people who would reach out to a crisis pregnancy center are in crisis. They have an unexpected pregnancy or something going on in their pregnancy and they need help.
He says the best place to seek that help is with a trained and licensed medical team who can give you complete information and any follow-up care you might need. He wishes more public resources and support were going towards places that can provide that. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
We are in the height of tick bite season, but when you get bit by a tick, it's not really a bite.
They have mouth parts that are remarkably adapted for basically drilling in and anchoring inside your skin.
Ouch. Michael Raup is professor emeritus of entomology at the University of Maryland.
That's why the tick is so darn hard to remove once it's on.
So before you take a ramble through the woods, Raup says it is crucial to slather on tick repellent, and you should follow his fashion advice.
I really do look geeky when I do this, but if you're wearing pants, tuck those pant legs into your socks.
You can even buy clothing treated with a tick repellent permethrin, or just stay out of the places where ticks are most at home.
CDC epidemiologist Allison Hinckley says try your best to avoid the grassy, brushy, or wooded areas.
If you're hiking, staying in the middle of a trail is a great way to avoid exposure to those ticks.
Once home, our experts suggest you check for ticks in the shower and throw your clothes in the dryer on medium to high heat for about 30 minutes to kill the bugs at any life stage. And Hinckley says if you do find a tick,
the best way to remove a tick is to use fine-tipped tweezers, although you can use your fingertips. If there are any parts that get left in your skin after you remove the tick, it's okay.
After you remove the tick, Professor Raup recommends sending it to a lab for identification.
Not only are they going to identify which species the tick is, these tick testing laboratories will determine actually which species of tick-borne illness pathogen they are carrying.
And if you're feeling tired with flu-like symptoms or if you have a rash in the shape of a bullseye, the CDC's Hinckley says act quickly.
That's certainly a sign that it's time to get to your healthcare provider. You can get antibiotics for it that help get rid of the infection. And the sooner you get it, the better the outcome.
Just a few tips. Yeah,
they're
enjoying some surviving the outdoors in a fashion challenge safety. So, or you can just stay home and eat ice cream and not go anywhere.
Or watch FIFA. Watch FIFA. That's what we're doing. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm A. Martinez.
You are listening to People Power Radio, KAXE, KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Deng. And a reminder, you know, you can never be too careful when it comes to tick bite prevention.
This is true. Yeah, Lyme's disease sounds like it's a nasty piece of business. I've been fortunate enough to not ever have it.
And there's some other tick illnesses that are going around right now. So be careful out there. That is DJ Deng. I'm Andrew DeZingle. And when DJ Deng appears on the Wednesday morning show, I like to go through musicians' birthdays for the day to get his live reaction to these artists, because it's you never know what you're going to get. I've been surprised before. I can't think of one off the top of my head that was a positive surprise.
What were you surprised by?
But let's just go with it. First up, we got Chris Wood, born on this day, 1944. He was in the band Traffic.
I was going to say Chris Wood is a big striker for New Zealand. He knows how to throw his weight around in front of the net. He's a great soccer player.
Mm.
This fellow that is in Traffic, I'm not familiar with him.
I don't even know. All I know about Traffic is Steve Winwood was in it, but I can't think of any Traffic songs.
Didn't Clapton have something to do with traffic?
I don't think so.
No.
But speaking
I'm thinking of Cream.
Speaking of Clapton, the rock guitarist that replaced him in the Yardbirds, Jeff Beck, was born on this day in 1944. And of course, later formed the Jeff Beck Group. Thoughts on Jeff Beck?
The thing I like the most about Jeff Beck is he formed the basis for one of the characters in Spinal Tap.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Turn It Up to 11 guy. Was that Nigel Tufnel? Or was Nigel Tufnel the blonde-haired guy? He was the dark-haired guy that was...
Yeah, the one that Christopher Guest played.
A little bit on the thick side.
Next up, we have the lead singer of The Zombies, Colin Blunstone, born in the state in 1945. Now, you can't say anything bad about The Zombies.
I mean, when your name is Colin Bloodstone and you're the lead singer of The Zombies, yeah, you're right. I can't say anything. I didn't know they had such a deep gothic connection.
Man, Odyssey and Oracle is an all-timer album for me. I can listen to that thing every day.
Name a really, really good track that's not a hit.
Care of Cell 44.
Care of Cell 44?
Yeah.
Oh. Care, like C-A-R-E,
yeah.
Of... Or
for? I think it's Care Of or Care For.
Is it remember. A prison song?
It's about his girlfriend getting out of prison. He's very excited about it.
Oh. See, he even has girlfriends who go to jail.
And it's the first track on the album.
He's like, he's checking off all the rock and roll boxes.
Care Of Cell 44.
Cool name. Cool band name. Girlfriends in prison. He's just checking off all the rock and roll boxes.
You got that as your starter. You got Time of the Season as the album closer. It's a great time.
Cool. Zombies.
Then we got Mick Fleetwood, the drummer of Fleetwood Mac, born on this day. Now, from my understanding, you were a bigger fan of the blues Fleetwood Mac.
No. No. Your understanding is incorrect.
Ooh.
I really only liked, really. Like, now Fleetwood Mac is so revitalized, I guess you would say, in the public mind. Like, their songs have been for maybe 5 years now, been experiencing one comeback after another, whether it's through advertisements or
even
whatever.
Their like cheesiest 80s albums have been reevaluated as like now classics.
Genius, yeah. I only really, really personally ever liked the song Tusk.
Okay.
With the marching
Don't
band.
Don't tell me that you love me.
Yeah, with the marching band stuff in there. Super dope. And also, was he... So there were two married couples in Fleetwood Mac, right? Was he one of them?
No.
He was the one that wasn't. So he had to sit in the middle of all that drama all the time, just on behind his drum kit.
Well, I'm not sure if he sat out all
the time. Was he involved in some of the affairs?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Andrew.
I feel like he was somehow involved.
You can't just throw that out there.
I'm not 100% on it.
Everyone's reading between the lines right now. Mick Fleetwood had affairs with everybody in the band. Facts.
I feel like he was also going through a divorce while they were making the album. Rumors.
I mean, that would be a nightmare to be the one person that's not intimately involved with anyone else in the band. And then the other four are, and they're always fighting and hating each other and loving each other and hating each other. And you're just sitting there like, oh, boy.
Well, I think he was probably not happy all the time either.
you're really couching your words carefully here. I feel like you're worried that the estate of Mick Fleetwood's going to come for you legally.
I don't want that to come to pass. He has way more money than I do. Patrick Mores, the keyboardist for Yes and the Moody Blues.
No.
Knights in White Satin, you won't even give credit to that one?
I've heard he's a great father.
John Ilsley, the bass guitarist for Dire Straits.
Not my jam.
Not even the first album?
Not even the first album.
Wow, Sultans of Swing. I think you need to get into a dark room with a thunderstorm going on in the background, put the headphones on and get Sultans of Swing.
It just makes me feel like I'd be riding an elevator all day.
An elevator, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What about Romeo and Juliet?
What about
one of the greatest unrequited love songs of all time?
Oh, gee, and you named it Romeo and Juliet. How clever.
Now you're just making me mad. All right, next we got Terrence Astro Wilson, the percussionist trumpet player for UB40.
I was going to say UB40. Astro, I remember him. I saw them in a teeny tiny club that was in South Minneapolis that was modeled after, holy brain fart, Marilyn Monroe. I think it was called Marilyn's. It wasn't called Marilyn's. But hardly anybody came. And UB40 was crammed up on this teeny tiny little stage. It was before like Red Red Wine had their cover of that song had blown up. So
okay. Yeah, I think I have the first UB40 CD.
They're like the little brother of the two-tone ska movement.
Yeah.
It's like a multiracial band from Birmingham, England, which was a very Jamaican influenced city in England. And yeah, I like UB40.
All right, this next one, I want you to be careful with your words because I'm a big fan of this guy. It's Andy McCluskey. He's the vocalist and bass guitarist for Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
OMD. Way before there was OMG.
There was OMD.
I'm just going to end it right there.
What? You don't like any of their songs?
I'm trying to think of one. No, I went through a little phase where I liked like those types of groups.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ultravox, which had a more rock and roll sort of basis. But OMD, I can't think of a song. Name one.
If You Leave, Electricity.
Yeah.
So In Love.
Maybe too poppy for me. I'm not sure.
I feel like you would like the self-titled album where they kind of, the song starts off with this really kind of gothic rock song that's very enjoyable.
Okay.
Up next, we got Kurt Smith, the bass guitarist and vocalist for Tears for Fears. I feel like you're going to say the same thing about OMD.
No, for some reason, I feel like I have to give Tears for Fears some respect. They have like songs that weren't their biggest hits. They have some cool songs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the name of one right off the top of my head, but...
We got to work it out?
Maybe.
Or we can't work it
out? You know, and everybody... forget it. There's no work in this hour. I love that song. But yeah, everyone wants to rule the world. Over time, still has its own charms.
Mm-hmm. Sowing the Seeds of Love.
Yeah.
Which is like their attempt to do a Beatles...
What's the one with like the xylophone? Like
do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
Yeah.
We'll look it up in the archive. And then finally, we got Jeff Cease, the Black Crowes guitarist for the debut album.
I mean, you could just listen to actual blues music. Like, why?
What is the big
like,
Black
Crowes? That's cool.
Song?
You're just... I mean, it's a blues rock band, you know?
She talks to angels. That's the big one. There okay. we go. I don't really like that song. All right. Well, that wraps...
Happy birthday to you all. Only men, huh? Only male musicians were born on this day.
It looks like
weird.
It.
Not one female musician was born on this day for the whole history of music.
But since we were talking football, I'm going to play the new Bell and Sebastian song, which
oh,
I believe...
Oh, it's 100% a football song.
A football song. It is. Called It Only Takes One Lion.
There are days that seem dark and long, where the job is getting you down. So you shut your eyes and you think back to the game. Big Mac sauce is banging his chest. Tierney brings us back from the dead. And the last McLean shot is hanging in the air. This is Scotland, where everybody knows you start with nothing. This is Scotland, where you can join an army that's for peace. We love football when Florida is coming to Miami. We love football. We got another tango with Brazil. Yeah.